Hello, guys. This is Doug Aldrich from the Dead Daisies. Vigatus, dear. You are listening to the Blog of Rock.
Hallo Leute, dass ihr heute wieder eingeschaltet habt, zeigt mir, dass ihr noch lange nicht genug habt vom American Road Trip, meinem The Block of Rock Special. Alle Stammgäste meines Podcasts kennen ja bereits Geschichte hinter dieser Staffel. Für alle anderen hier nochmal in Kürze. Animiert von einem Gläschen meines Lieblingsbourbon Maker's Mark kam ich auf den Geschmack, gemeinsam mit euch einen virtuellen Trip quer durch die USA zu machen, um nach den Wurzeln meiner musikalischen Helden zu buddeln. Wer den bisherigen Verlauf dieser Reise verpasst hat, der sollte sich noch einmal schnell die dazugehörige Trailer-Episode etwas weiter unten anhören. Vor allem, welche Rolle hier eine Flasche aus Kentucky spielt, die mich mit einem milden, süßlichen Inhalt bei 45 Umdrehungen zu diesen handgemachten Geschichten inspiriert hat. Wir sind vor einigen Wochen in Chicago gestartet, waren zunächst bei Cheatrick in Rockford, Illinois. Danach ging es über weite Teile der alten Route 66 nach St. Louis, Missouri, wo wir jede Menge Südstaaten-Feeling von Devin Allman und seiner Allman Betts Band bekommen haben. Anschließend besuchten wir die Bourbon Distillery in Noretto, Kentucky, in der wir viel über die Herstellung von Maker's Mark erfahren durften. Ein paar Meilen weiter hat uns in Edmonton unser Freund John Fred Young vom Blackstone Sherry verraten, dass er von einem Stadionbesuch eines Fußball-Bundesligaspieles träumt. Von dort aus machten wir einen längeren Stopover in Nashville, Tennessee, der aktuell sicherlich wichtigsten Musikstadt der USA. Von dort aus machten wir einen längeren Stopover in Nashville, Tennessee, der aktuell sicherlich wichtigsten Musikstadt der USA. Hier haben wir zunächst die beiden Lovell-Schwestern, besser bekannt als Larkin Poe, getroffen und danach den König des Modern Blues, Joe Bonamassa, der uns auf eine Tasse seines leckeren Royal Tea in sein Studio einlud. In Louisiana hört man die bewegende Geschichte des blinden Zimmermanns Robert Finlay, der aktuell als The Biggest Living Soul Singer gilt und gemeinsam mit uns eine bluesige Zeitreise 60 Jahre zurück unternahm, auf die Baumwollfelder in seiner Kindheit. Und in der letzten Woche ging es an den Colorado River nach Austin, wo wir mit Jürgen Engler von den Krupps einen Trip durch die texanische Metropole unternahmen und über den Tod sprachen. Und heute? California Dreamin'! LA, here we come! Steigt schnell ein, aber ich warne euch, es wird ein sehr langer Trip. Von Austin geht es westwärts fast die komplette Strecke über die Interstate 10. Vorbei an El Paso, Texas, quer durch New Mexico und Arizona. Wir bestaunen die Bäume vom Joshua Tree Nationalpark, bis wir endlich die Lichter der Glitzermetropole vor Augen haben. Nicht nur die Doors haben vor genau 50 Jahren der City of Light mit ihrem Song LA Woman ein musikalisches Denkmal für die Ewigkeit gesetzt. Kalifornien ist der bevölkerungsreichste Bundesstaat und wird auch gerne als der Golden State bezeichnet, was noch aus der Zeit des Goldrausches Mitte des vorletzten Jahrhunderts stammt. Die in dieser Staffel immer gerne zitierte Website visittheusa.de lässt uns wissen. Die in dieser Staffel immer gerne zitierte Website visittheusa.de lässt uns wissen. Von den weltberühmten Stränden über die weiten Ebenen im Landesinneren bis hin zu den Granitgipfeln der Sierra. Kalifornien bietet Urlaubserlebnisse für ein ganzes Leben. An einem Ort, der so groß und abwechslungsreich ist wie Kalifornien, ist für jeden etwas geboten. Und es bleibt sogar noch genügend Neues für den nächsten Kalifornienurlaub übrig. Sonnige Strände, riesige Surferwellen, Kultur und Unterhaltung in den glamourösen Städten, unvergleichliche Landschaften und atemberaubende Ausblicke. Kalifornien ist eindeutig der Superstar unter den amerikanischen Bundesstaaten. Euch erwarten mehr fantastische Themenparks, als je ein Kind auf seinen Wunschzettel packen könnte, sowie Weine und Gerichte, die weltweit ihresgleichen suchen. Na und natürlich jede Menge gute Musik. Das finale Ziel unserer über 3000 Meilen langen Reise ist die Stadt der Engel, Los Angeles, California. Die mit gut 4 Millionen Einwohnern im Stadtgebiet nach New York City zweitgrößte Stadt der USA ist das Wirtschafts-, Geschäfts- und Kulturzentrum des Bundesstaates. L.A. ist aber auch das Zentrum der amerikanischen Film- und Fernsehbranche und war vor allem in den 70ern und 80ern die Metropole der Rockmusik. Für uns Rock'n'Roll-Touristen gibt es natürlich jede Menge Geschichte zu erleben. Vor allem auf dem Sunset Strip in West Hollywood mit den legendären Clubs wie das Whiskey A Go-Go, das Roxy, der Viper Room oder dem Rainbow Bar and Grill, dort, wo Lemmy Kilmister seinen letzten Drink nahm. Hier kennt sich auch unser heutiger Gast bestens aus, Doug Aldrich. Der Gitarrist mit seiner goldenen Les Paul zählt seit Jahren zu den gefragtesten Musikern und Songwritern, was er schon unter anderem bei Dio und Whitesnake unter Beweis gestellt hat. Seit 5 Jahren gibt er beim Künstlerkollektiv The Dead Daisies den Ton an, die Anfang des Jahres mit ihrem neuen Album Holy Ground mitten in die Top 10 der deutschen Albumcharts reingedüst sind. Allen Freunden des 70er Jahre orientierten Heavy Rocks mit großen Posen und massiven Grooves wird es ganz sicher gefallen. Was auch an der Mitwirkung eines Neuzugangs namens Glenn Hughes legen könnte, der mit seinen unverkennbaren Gesangs- und Bassspiel den Daisies eine neue herzhafte Duftnote verpasst hat. Bei unserem Talk ging es natürlich um die neue Scheibe, aber auch um seine Interpretation eines Holy Grounds, zu dem für Familienmensch Doug Aldrich vor allem seine Frau und seine 2 Kinder gehören. Ich war zufällig live dabei, als er 2012 auf der Frankfurter Musikmesse seine heutige Frau Daniela über eine gemeinsame Freundin kennengelernt hat, die damals mein Interview mit Doug anlässlich des Forevermore-Albums von Whitesnake koordiniert hatte. Unser ausführliches Gespräch fand bereits im Februar statt, am Tag nach dem Super Bowl, welches ja Tom Brady mit seinen Tampa Bay Buccaneers für sich entscheiden konnte. Ich erwischte den sympathischen Blondschopf in seinem Studio mit seiner Signature-Klampfe im Arm und wünsche euch jetzt ganz viel Spaß.
Uwe,
good to see you.
How are you, man? Yeah,
actually, I'm a bit tired. I watched the match last night until 5 o'clock in the morning.
The Super Bowl.
That's right.
Yeah. Cool.
I'm a bit tired, but I'm happy to see you.
I'm tired too because I stayed up. I went to bed early right after the game, like early my time, and then I woke up at like midnight. So I was up till, probably 6, and then I went back to sleep for a couple hours. Sometimes, that happens. You go to bed too early.
That's right. But I'm happy to talk to you because I just found a picture which shows us together. And it's 9 years ago. I got to show you.
Yes.
At the Marshall booth. I was working for a German music TV station. And our dear friend, Sandra.
I remember, yeah.
Dear friend Sandra coordinated this interview, and later on we went to a nice bar in Frankfurt, but I understood you hadn't had so much eyes for me, but for the ladies, and I think that was one of the first days you met Danny.
Yes, that was the first, that was probably the first, I think that was the first day I met Danny.
That's crazy.
I remember being at that restaurant and just talking to her going, oh my God, this girl is just so sweet, and she still is. We have an amazing family. And sometimes it's like yesterday was Sunday. We were just all piled into the same bed in the morning and just kind of had, the family, we were just tackling each other and playing. And I just thought, this is so great, Of course, Danny gave up a lot. She left home, to come to the U.S. to be with me and Ryder. But then we got Ruby and we've got pets and we've got a house and we're very happy.
So did you follow the football match with your family?
Yeah, Danny and I watched it. She knows Tom Brady and she was like, who are we pulling for? I go, well, I'm kind of interested to see if Tom Brady can do it again with a different team. And I thought it was great for him that he did that. And we actually ran into him and his wife. We don't know them, but we ran into them at a party once. And they're just like larger than life, those guys.
So yeah. Are you a football supporter at all?
Yeah, I like my team is the Philadelphia Eagles. That's who I was kind of in my high school years. That's who the team was that I was raised on, and I always liked them. But now, and I still like them, but I also, just enjoy watching a good game. Yesterday was fun to watch how Tom Brady, focused in and just kind of executed these plays, and just tore. You know, at first, it was like, as you saw, he didn't quite figure it out. But then after the second or third possession, he started figuring out, okay, this is what we're gonna do, and it was just like, you know, diabolically attacking them, breaking that team apart.
And it seems he's getting better from year to year on. This is crazy, even if at this age.
I know. But that Patrick Mahomes, he did make some amazing plays where he was off balance and he would throw sideways. And
that's just right, yeah.
You know, the guys weren't lucky enough to catch it, but he made some very – he's – I mean, they won last year. He's going to be around for a long time.
That's right. And Gronk did a great job yesterday too.
Yeah. 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 Awesome to see.
So you're living in LA and you're still supporting the teams from the East. So you didn't, you know, go out to the Raiders or the Chargers.
No, the Raiders, when I moved to Los Angeles, there was the Rams and the Raiders. Yeah. And then the Raiders went to Oakland and the Rams went to St. Louis. And I stayed with the Eagles. And then the Rams came back a couple of years ago, and I support them. I like them. But and the Chargers, too, when they came from San Diego, I liked them. But, I mean, I don't really have, you know, with you got to – it takes a minute to – I'm not a kind of guy that just jumps on the team that – like, if L.A., which they did do really well last year – I was happy for him, but I wasn't invested like with the Eagles. That's my whole family is into them, you know? So it's kind of, and a lot of friends that I grew up with, you know, it's like, go Eagles, you know?
What about the other US sports? LA, you have lots of great teams like the Lakers, the Kings or the Dodgers. Are you going around with your son?
I like the Dodgers a lot. And I like the Lakers. I used to love the Lakers when Kobe and Shaq were there. That was my Lakers time. And in the 80s, when Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar were there, I loved them. It's just different, you know, after Kobe retired and they got LeBron, I like them, but it's not the same. I was a Lakers fan for a long time, and then they were really bad for a while in the mid 90s, and it was fun to watch them kind of rebuild little by little, and then they'd get so far and then they'd get beat, and then they got Kobe and they got Shaq, and it was like it started to work out, and I just loved watching Kobe, totally inspired by Kobe, just as much as a musician, as a guitar player that I would say I grew up on, you know.
And what about German Bundesliga? Your wife is from Cologne. What about the FC Köln?
Yeah, she loves them, and we've been to a couple matches when we were in town. It's been a while. We haven't been to Germany for over a year, so looking forward to getting back later this year, hopefully. Definitely at Christmas. I think we made a plan because we stayed home at Christmas this last year. To, you know, do what we could for COVID to be safe. But next year we definitely are going to be in Germany.
For the Christmas market.
Yes. And the Glühwein.
So from Super Bowl to Super Group, we're talking today about the Dead Daisies and all the other bands you've been involved with for my podcast, The Block of Rock. Of course, you know, starting off with the Daisies, it's not a band. It's a collective of great musicians, which are changing from time to time. And you're next to David now, the longest member in the band.
Yes. I don't know how that happened, but because it's collective, I guess. But it's been very fun working with David. He's an awesome guy and a very driven person. He you know, takes the band very seriously. And I like how he runs it. You know, like we would, before a show, David has this thing where he likes to do a briefing where he likes to go through the set and go like, you know, let's just go through this. And it's kind of me and him that do it, where we basically go through the ins and outs of each song, how we did it last night, how can we improve it? If there was anything that, you know, hey, you know, he'll say like, if there's anything we can do to improve it, let's talk about it. And we'll talk, we'll come up with, hey, what if we did this? And it just gets you, it gets you in the mindset. It's almost like we were talking about with sports, where you have a game plan, you know, every day you're trying to improve. And that, I really dig that, you know? So now we've got Glenn and the game plan has changed. And it's like, you know, we've got this new amazing weapon or singer and bass player, songwriter. And so we decided to take it into a new direction, you know, and blend the two, David's vision, Glenn and me, blend it all together.
It's crazy. You work with so many great artists. We're coming to that later. You work with Ronnie James Dio, with David Coverdale, and now with the voice of rock with Glenn Hughes. So
I've been, very lucky.
What more can there be?
I've been more blessed than I probably deserve, but I would say that I just live in the moment right now. I'm very excited. I mean, of course, worked with a lot of different great, some of the best, you know, with Coverdale and Dio and even Karabi, you know, and
not to forget Cal Swan.
When I would, you know, Cal Swan's the one that turned me on to the early Whitesnake. That was so important to me connecting with David. But Glenn is, he is a force of nature, because not only is he an amazing singer, but he's a ferocious bass player. He's just very powerful and very inspired playing. So it's inspiring to work with him. You know, it's inspiring to be on stage. We, as you probably know, we toured together in 2015, and some of the best live jams I ever had was with him, man. It was amazing. And he brought it on this album. I mean, it's Glenn's a big part of, he shines on Holy Ground. So I'm very excited for him and to be a part of it.
He was involved in the songwriting as well.
Glenn?
Yeah, Glenn, yeah.
Oh yeah, Glenn brought some complete songs to the band, and then we you know, we daisified them, kind of, you know, we put our thing on them. We always, you know, if somebody brings a song, you always want to try and up the game with it. And then, you know, so basically when they started talking to Glenn, they said, you know, management said, we're talking to Glenn. I go, wow, that'd be amazing. I never thought about it, because Glenn was very busy with his solo stuff. And he said, no, call him, you know, talk to him and see what you think. And I go, Glenn, is this for real? And he goes, that's time for you and I to make some music together with the Dead Daisies. And he says, Doug, I've got a couple things already I've been thinking about with you in mind. And I immediately came right here in my studio and started banging out some things I thought Glenn might like. And I presented him with things without pressure, you know, that, because Glenn's a very spiritual person. He needs to, like all singers, you know, they got to be into it. They can't, you just, it's not like, I mean, of course, you singer like Glenn can make up a vocal to any music, but it's better if he's inspired by it. So I just said, Glenn, here's what I've got for you. And we tore it apart, just like we did with everything, and came up with a new sound that we thought would be good for the Daisies.
The new album is a bit different than the previous ones, because I think it sounds more 70s vibes, more bluesy, more soul-y, due to Glenn's voice and also due to his bass playing. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were always inspired by 70s stuff. I mean, that's kind of where all my heroes are from, the 60s and 70s and the 80s. But I think to a large degree too, we have to give credit to Ben Gross, who produced the record, because he had a sound in mind. He took everything, you know, I basically played the same sounds that I always do, and he made a really nice sounding album that is very alive and real, very raw and in your face, and heavy and very heavy in some parts, and then definitely more delicate in other parts. So I think it was a combination of everything, you know. But yeah, definitely Glenn brought a lot of that, and then, you know, Ben as well did.
You've chosen a nice surrounding to produce the album. You did it in the south of France.
Yeah, it was, you know, management said, we started off actually working in Los Angeles at Sunset Sound, which is a very famous, it's a incredibly famous studio here it's in Hollywood. And we started off there, but still, you know, Glenn and I live in LA, so we'd be going home at night, and it's not the same as going to his place that's away from your home, where you can really focus. And the studio, when I saw the pictures of it, I thought, that's just, it's beautiful, man. It's like, who wouldn't want to work there? But didn't know what it was really like until we got there. And then we basically just, we lived there. We slept above the kitchen, and there's a bunch of bedrooms kind of going up. And then you'd go down and have breakfast and go directly into the studio and start work. And we'd basically work all day. Didn't really take lunch breaks. We just focus. We'd kind of plow through all day. And then dinner time, they had two chefs that would cook an amazing dinner for us. And then we'd, you know, maybe sometimes we'd go back to work, or we'd go, you know, keep writing or whatever. But it was great. Really amazing for us to gel as a band and focus.
I think it's really put the soul into the songs, because what you described to me reminded me of the stories I've heard from the productions of the 70s, when the band worked together for weeks in a close room, and not like today sending files throughout the world.
That's right. You can definitely hear it. I mean, there's something about playing together when you're tracking the record that really, like, for example, if Dean was playing, you know, something, and he's, you know, he's grooving and I'm grooving, and we're coming up to the chorus, and then all of a sudden I go like this, and he's like, he sees me and he kind of leans into it. I think it just comes out. It just feels different than, like you say, if I sent him, or if he sent me a drum track and I just played on it, there's a connection that's missing.
So And it was worth. The album is a great success. Top all over the world. Number 6 in Germany. Incredible. It's a huge success. I'm happy for you.
Thank you. Yeah, we're really grateful for the, you know, response it's been getting. And it's, you know, it was interesting, because we worked on this thing in 2019. It was the end of 2019. We were in France doing it, and we got into the, we were in this bubble, and we created what you're hearing now, but we had to sit on it all last year. We released a couple of tracks, as you may know, but it's just bizarre, you know, the whole 2020 with this pandemic and having this record ready, and then listening to it and going, wow, the lyrics are really like, it's like songs like Unspoken and Come Alive and Far Away. They're all really can, you know, you can, there's some gray area in there where the listener can actually make it what they want it to be about. And it's kind of a healing record, that is the way that Glenn writes, you know. So it's perfect for where we are right now, trying to get out of this pandemic and come alive.
So let's dive into it a bit. So okay. What is Holy Ground all about, the title track?
That's about what you want it to be about. That's what I'm saying. That's so cool. Is for me, Holy Ground is my family. Is my my children are the holiest ground. So everything that I do, of course, it's fun. I mean, I've got the greatest job. It's about playing music. But I mean, Holy Ground is about what you want it to be. I think Glenn's vision in that song might have been about something else. So That's what I was saying. I love it. He leaves room for the interpretation. For the band, the Dead Daisies, Holy Ground is might be something different. You know, Holy Ground might be as simple as, you know, this band is starting new. We're starting a new revolutionary sound, not revolutionary, but starting a new revolution with this new sound for the band. And that's Holy Ground, you know, so it might be that. I can only give you my interpretation because that's all I can do. But if you talk to Glenn, he has a specific thing that he writes about. So he would say it's about it's about the human condition and the spirit that you have. So that's Holy Ground.
The second track is also something which is really unique because it already consists like a not only a bass line but also a bass solo from Glenn, like no other. So this is a crazy, crazy song.
Yeah, originally that was the first thing that I started working on for Glenn because I thought of Glenn. I thought Glenn Hughes. I know what he likes. He's a heavy groove guy. He loves it, and that's the same type of stuff that. You know, that I sometimes when I would present a riff or something to the Dead Daisies, it would sometimes be a groove thing. But this was something I knew Glenn would latch onto. And I kind of envisioned, you know, when I put together a very rough demo with a little slightly different bass line. And so when I presented it to Glenn, I took the bass out of the thing altogether. So he came up with what he wanted to. But I had envisioned a bass solo because the song is very simple, very groovy. And then I thought, why not have a bass solo, you know? But then he just started saying that line, can you feel my bass line? And Ben, the producer, said, oh, that's really catchy. So it was just like I envisioned Glenn, you know, we have this heavy groove and then the verse comes and he stops and he just basically owns it. I'll play on one side, keep the riff going. David will play the chords, the passing chords. And then when the chorus kicks in, Glenn hits it. And I didn't have any idea what the chorus was going to be or what the melody was going to be. But when I heard him start singing on the verse, I was like, whatever it is, it's going to be great. So it's just a simple song. And we worked on it all together, you know.
The next track I picked is My Fate. It's a track which sounded very dark, very doomy, a bit like Black Sabbath.
That's a song. Glenn brought that in and he, you know, basically the riff was just two notes and it was just very simple. Bam, 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 you know. And then the verse was very simple, three chords. And then it goes to the chorus and it's just a very simple, you know, all in all heavy and simple song, but it's got a great vibe.
Next song you've already released before, Unspoken, last year on a Lockdown Sessions EP, but it sounded totally different, of course, because it was all acoustic, but it's in this new version, it became a different kind of song.
You're talking about the acoustic version?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it's a great song. It's got a classic Glenn chord in it, which is basically, you know, you got the... this right here. That's classic Glenn right there, that chord. But then we wanted to give something, you know, we wanted to stay connected with our friends and the fans. And so we started to do some lockdown videos, you know, and so we did that one. We just threw it together. I think, I can't remember if Glenn played it and sent it to me or if I played it and sent it to him, but we just tried to do what everyone was doing, stay connected. And eventually we did Fortunate Son and we did 30 Days in the Hole. And we did Righteous Days. We did a little different version on all of them, but 30 Days in the Hole was really cool. I really like the acoustic version a lot. It's very like gospel kind of.
I love this track also, but when I hear it now to the lyrics, 30 days in a hole, you know, we are now at least 1 year in a hole due to the lockdown.
I know, man. I know. It's
and it will be even longer.
Yes. Well, we're getting out of that hole, though. We're going to do it.
You end the record with an epic ballad, Far Away. This is, you know, this is the final of the album. I love this track. So what's the story behind this?
That was not, we didn't prepare that really until the very end. It was, we went to France and we focused in on, we had, you know, probably 12 or 13, 14 songs. And Glenn came back and he said, I got a ballad idea. And he played me the basic parts of it. Just picked up my guitar and played him. And he goes, what do you think? I was like, dude, that, if we get it right, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be like, I said, this could be your Grammy track, you know, but we got to get it right. You know, it's a matter of a song like that. If you do it just on acoustic, it could be beautiful, but you've got the opportunity with a band to do these peaks and valleys. And it was a matter of trying to, I definitely, as soon as I heard it, I knew what I thought we should do. And we started to figure out the tempo, because it's very delicate in that you can't do that song at one tempo. It's kind of breathes, it comes up and down. And so the first thing was just to get the back track, the backing of the track together. And we played it and played it. We arranged it and tried to, you know, play it with that kind of intensity where it would come up and down. But it wasn't until we got the drum track that we could actually start to layer it and do like, it's something like the way that Jimmy Page might have approached Stairway to Heaven, or I had done that with Whitesnake on a song, track called Forevermore. So we just, you know, we finally got a track with Dino that we all played on it, but the drum track was set. And then I said, Glenn, let me go in and play, you know, the guitar in the, let me go in the studio and try playing through it and make sure it's all working, you know, how you envisioned it. And once I did, I felt like, okay, this is it. Dino nailed the tempos, everything's there. So it's just a matter of doing the treatment on it. And of course I knew Glenn, I had heard what he was singing, so I knew it was going to be amazing. But we just had to get that bed track correct, which I think we did.
Funny you've mentioned Forevermore, because I also got reminded to lots of Whitesnake stuff when listening to Far Away. For me, it's the opposite of Still of the Night, which starts quite heavy and then goes up to a more mid-tempo slow section in the middle and then go heavy again. Your track is the other way around, but Forevermore is a good comparison. That's right.
You know, I mean, think about sometimes, you know, I mean, I gotta listen to Far Away again, because it's like, I remember thinking like, we gotta find a way to do this correctly. We can't mess this up, you know, because sometimes with a song like that, if you could do it and it would be good, but maybe it wouldn't appeal to so many people, but a lot of people are responding to that song. And I think it's for a couple of reasons. One, because Glenn made it beautiful. I mean, when you break it down, you could do that now with the piano and a vocal, and it would always be amazing. But also the way that Ben Gross mixed it and the way that everyone played on it really just made it be a great track. But I want to go back and listen to it fresh again, because it's been about a month since I heard it.
You mentioned Dino. What happened?
Dino Bandino, what are you doing? No, Dino decided that he wanted to step out. He basically has had a few back issues. He mentioned it when we were in the studio tracking in 2019, where he's like, man, I got this thing, I got to get it taken care of, you know? And then COVID hit and it was like, he didn't want to go to the hospital because, you know, that was like, we're sick, you know, he didn't want to go there and get sick and get COVID. We didn't know, you know, how bad it could be, or he probably would have been fine had he caught COVID, but he didn't want to do that. So he didn't get an operation on his back. And then we got together last October and we played through all the album and we kind of rehearsed some of the older songs. And he was definitely hurting, you know, he was struggling with his back, and just he couldn't, you know, you could tell it wasn't feeling good. So he decided, you know, look, it's going to take me a while to get better. I'm just going to step out and take care of that. But also Dean had been, during his free time last year, he had started a new thing, a new project with some guys, a guy from Rascal Flatts and some other people in Nashville. And Dean was actually singing on that. And I think he really was excited about pursuing that lead vocal aspect. So we, you know, the Dead Daisies is a collective. People come and go, that's it. And it was a rough year last year. You know, Dean, he's never been off the road that long. No, none of us have. So he started doing that project and he got into it. And so now we had an opening, and immediately we thought about, you know, guys that had been in the band before, and Tom Licofleros had been in the Dead Daisies before I got in the band. He did a couple of tours, and Tommy's just like, he's just a freaking powerhouse, man. He's like, I've said this the other day, I think he's about the heaviest drummer out there right now. And I think he's really going to add a solidness, heaviness to this sound of the band.
I saw him with Black Sabbath on the last tour. It was, his drum solo was unforgettable.
He's brilliant. I mean, he's young and strong, man. He's gonna like kick this band in the ass. It's gonna be great.
So what's happened now with Dino is out with the Revolution Saints? Because this is a project really it's a different kind of music. It's more mainstream melodic rock, AOR type. But I love these records from the Revolution Saints. What will happen with this band?
Well, I mean, you never know, but right now Glenn and I are focused 1,000% on Holy Ground. We want to support it, promote it, tour it, and we've already worked on some new music. And I don't know what the future holds for Revolution Saints. I mean, it's always been a project, like we talked about, where you basically mail in your parts. And I know that people enjoyed it, and I'm happy about that. It's fun to play that stuff. Like you said, it's a very specifically 80s melodic rock type of thing. But I think that right now I'm just so focused on Holy Ground that I haven't even thought about it, to be honest.
And on your biggest band, which is your family.
Yes, that's right. It's been a little strange during COVID because my wife started Danny started a business called Mama Wunderbar, or Wunderbar, as you would say. And it's doing really well. And it's kind of, you know, it's difficult to start a small business, especially, you know, she's basically started it out of the house when I was away. She would be doing all this stuff and taking care of the kids. And now she's super busy. So I've been off the road. And it's been just natural for me to kind of take care of the kids a little bit more. But also I still got to work and do things for the Dead Daisies. So it's just been a little juggling, you know, during COVID.
How did their German improve in between?
I'm still working on it. I have an app on my phone that called Babbel that my German is not improved greatly, but, my daughter speaks German and understands it, and she's five. And she basically constantly is watching, you know, German videos, and whenever there's TV on, it's in German for her. But it's hard for me, you know. I need to be in Germany, I think, to really get it to stick.
Did you discover through the pandemic situation new sides of yourself, or maybe some new hobbies? what you haven't done before when you were on the road all the time?
Yeah, there's something that I did that has been major. That is, we are renovating our house, and it's been a long time that we wanted to do it, because ever since we had Ruby, our daughter, she didn't have her own bedroom. She was sleeping with us anyways, but we needed to expand the house. And so we got a loan, and we got the permits and got the plans done. And then we decided, you know, we weren't sure when we were going to do it, but because of COVID, pretty much when I found out that there was nothing happening last year, I was like, okay, let's do this. So I basically became the contractor, and I found a crew of guys that are great. And they had all these other people that, you know, that my main guy had connections with. He's a framer, but then he had connections with cement guys, and he had connections with drywall guys and painters and tile people and plumbers and electricians. And so I've been doing that on the side, and I've learned so much. It's incredible. I actually really like it, but I would prefer to be playing on the road, but it's been really good.
So this is a way you kept in shape.
Well, actually, I'm not in as good a shape as I will be once I get back to, you know, a little bit more of a normal life routine. It's because I've been, as the contractor, I'm basically just paying the guys and organizing the timing. So we're almost there. We're almost done. The house looks incredible. We're really excited about it. We're planning on moving back in at the end of this month, in February. So, but you know, we're still not there yet. We've got flooring to do. We've got to finish the bathrooms, and then there's all these permits, you know, and stuff, and inspections and stuff that you got to get done. So we're almost there.
And then hopefully you will get back on the road. I've seen you announce already some shows for 2022. And of course, we never know if there will be some shows during this year. So what is your perspective?
We have some shows set for this year that I'm hoping will work out. We've got shows all the way up till Christmas, starting in the summertime. So never know. I mean, maybe some of that can work out. I'm hopeful that you know, in the next month or two, that the numbers have been doing better in the US and in California, and they're going in a good direction. We still have to be very careful, but I'm hoping that it'll be like that in other parts of the world too, where the numbers will start to top out and then start to go down. I'm not sure about how Germany is doing exactly. I've forgotten, but I know in the UK it's still pretty rough right now. So we'll get there, you know. It's just a matter of when, and we all got to try and do our part to you know, like as you know, because you watched it, the Super Bowl, they had limited restaurants were open in Los Angeles, but you're not allowed to have a TV, because they feel like, okay, if there's a TV, then people are going to go there to watch the game, the Super Bowl, and people are going to be yelling at the TV, which, you know, can spread the germs and all that. So it's, you know, we got to help each other get through it, but we will get through it, and we'll be back on the road, and it'll be an amazing feeling to go see a show or to play at a show. Sooner the better. As soon as possible, we'll be there.
So, jetzt seid ihr dran. Wenn ihr auch Lust auf The Dead Daisies habt, dann klickt doch mal auf meine Playlist des American Road Trip. Das Ganze gibt es auf Spotify. Ihr findet den Link dazu in den Shownotes. Das ist die Beschreibung zu dieser Episode bei dem Portal, über die ihr diese Geschichte gerade hört. Für heute sind wir dann schon wieder durch. Aber wir bleiben noch ein bisschen hier in der Stadt der Engel. Ich hole mir jetzt noch einen Drink auf dem Sunset Strip. Prost! Auch auf euch! Und danke, dass ihr mir zugehört habt.